The World Tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. You're living in a time of dropouts from all society and the symptoms of a sick society all around us. People are dropping out from being people anymore today. And we're finding that disillusionment, unhappiness, frustration, worry about physical health and mental health are becoming a deepening concern to the average peoples in the affluent Western world, believe it or not. Today, we find our cities rife with disillusionment, with defeated, unhappy, frustrated people. Now, of course, immediately someone is going to say, oh boy, here we go again, another alarmist, somebody taking the dim view, talking about gloom and doom and all of that. Well, wait just a moment. I've got some statistics to read to you from a pollster, Lewis Harris, who told a San Francisco advertising club, much of American society, his words not mine, though affluent, is lonely and suspicious and anxious. And he said, we have pretty well taken care of the basics, hunger and shelter, but we haven't found a way to ease our hunger for human warmth. And then he gave the stats, which are the result of extensive surveys, by asking you people how you feel about things. Now, among Americans, and you people in Britain probably feel a little worse than most Americans do, with my apologies to you people in Britain, but the mail we receive and the people I talk to and look at and the pictures I've seen and from my extensive visits in Great Britain prove that disillusionment, frustration, unhappy, unsettled homes, and a basic hunger for human warmth is everywhere rife in Britain today. But he said, so far as the statistics are concerned, that among Americans today, 20% feel lonely most of the time. Now, you know, when you take 20% of the population feeling badly, it is a problem of some proportions. That's one-fifth of the population of one of the great nations on the face of the earth. And he said 26% suspect their spouse of infidelity. 28%, nearly one-third, say their children don't respect them. 18% say a member of the family is a potential juvenile delinquent. 16% say someone close to them gambles too much. That may be higher in Britain since they're on a wild gambling binge today, trying to get something for nothing and drown our sorrows by temporal sensual thrills and pleasures. And 34% in the United States think someone has a drinking problem close to them that they're concerned about. This survey showed that 35% of all American homes have three or more of these ills, and the figure jumped to 43% in various suburban areas, 47% for families with $10,000 incomes and above, and 53% in the executive family class. Now, what does that tell us? It tells us the more money they have, the unhappier they tend to be. Yet other nationwide surveys have proved that people are unhappy because they don't have enough money. Now, you talk about a vicious circle. There's an old saying, money can't buy happiness, but it helps. That's the way people look at it. And major sources of happiness, children and enough money and so on, are just not sufficient for people today. When you talk about a world, you've got to talk about a world full of things, contented cows, and full of unhappy and discontented people. Robert Louis Stevenson wrote, the world is so full of a number of things, I'm sure we should all be as happy as kings. And our Western world is filled with things, all right. But it's not filled with enough money, so say people, and not filled with enough happiness. And we haven't yet learned to live with our things, and we haven't yet learned that things do not make us happy. But again, referring to a nationwide survey, tells us that Americans find their happinesses in their children, and their worries in their money. And you know, most people are worried and confused and defeated and frustrated today. And first of all, they're frustrated because of overall world conditions, and secondly, because of their private and their personal conditions. Health, aches and pains, frustrations, wayward husbands and wives, rebellious children, adverse weather, business failures, financial worries. These are the reasons cited by so many people who write to this program. You write to me, you write to the world tomorrow, and tell us about their problems and their troubles. It's amazing how many people worry about health these days. And amazing how it is the most overfed nation on earth. You people again in South Africa and Canada and perhaps Australia will just have to listen in. but you're much in the same category. America has been put down as the most overfed nation on Earth, and yet one that is very much undernourished. 19 million Americans suffer with some chronic disease or other. And 7 out of 10 men you will meet over 45 suffer from some form of chronic disability or sickness. And mental health is becoming a bigger worry than ever before. It's the greatest U.S. health problem today. Now, the greatest health problem among teenagers is simply pregnancy, believe it or not. And the second major health worry among teenagers today is, again, believe it or not, I've got the statistics from health departments, modern statistics, up-to-date statistics, 1965 and 66 statistics. The second major worry is growing venereal disease. Now, meanwhile, the greatest U.S. health problem overall is mental illness. A panel of Long Beach psychiatrists declared that mental illness is the nation's greatest health problem. They said there are more hospital beds used for psychiatric patients than for any other type of patient. So today we've got defeated, disillusioned, unhappy, frustrated people filled with psychoses and neuroses, with doubts, fears, and worries. Our minds are upset. People just cannot find mental and emotional stability. They don't know how to achieve it. We find people that are just off in their thinking. And as if to underline the whole problem, you see a growing trend in motion pictures and television serials and novels toward idiocy, insanity, comic book characters running around in stockings all the way up to their necks, science fiction type things with all kinds of weird machines and visitors from outer space, and the more blood-curdling screams there are of gargantuan spiders devouring thousands of people in one gulp, or this blob that maybe oozes out of your sink and finally fills your whole home, or green algae going on a rampage or something. The more offbeat, the more wild, the sicker it is, the more degenerate it is, the more unusual and weird it is, the more people seem to go for it today. And that goes for clothing styles, for so-called pop art. That goes for so-called music. You know what music is anymore. It's a kind of an enervating, jangling noise that has a certain beat. It's kind of like standing next to one of our giant newspaper presses. You ever had the experience? You're driving along in your automobile and your radio is on to a certain type of music, or you could call it that, and after a while your thoughts are all scatterbrained and frazzled, and you're enervated and upset and confused and worried, and it's drab and gray and dull outside, and you're mad at your wife and maybe your mother-in-law and everybody else you know, and you don't know quite why you feel that way until somebody, in a moment of sheer inspiration, reaches up and turns off, or at least changes the dial, the radio, so that you don't have to hear that kind of confusion. Now, maybe it has its place, but I'm not even willing to throw it a sop. I mean, to each his own. If the shoe fits, wear it. I mean, some people like to take their chances with their own minds, with their own physical bodies, and they say, I can't see anything wrong with it. Well, that's fine. I wouldn't try to convince you otherwise. You're welcome to your opinion, as I'm welcome to mine. You know, time was when a square person was a person who was all right. He was a square shooter. He was squarely out of debt. He was right, right angles, a right guy, as they used to say, a square dealer. He was squared away in military parlance. But today, a square is a guy who still wears a thin belt and whose trousers still have a crease, and who still believes in morality, in law, in obedience, in love toward fellow man, a person who still has hope for the future, a shining goal ahead, a person who refuses to sink into the mire of hallucinogen-induced oblivion. That's a square today. A person who refuses to drop out from life, who still says there's a reason for living, a purpose in life, a goal ahead, a reason why you ought to have a sound, stable mind and a wholesome, healthy body, and warm, loving, respectful, obedient children, and a goal for you and your family, because the world is going to get better. But of course, as we all have to admit, not before it gets a whole lot worse. Now, the whys, well, I think the whys are rather obvious, but the real statistics about just how bad it's becoming of this thing of our insanity today and people dropping out from society is really hair-raising. More than a third of the nation is suffering from one of the 18 main illnesses and handicapping conditions, and that is an estimate compiled by the National Health Education Committee. At the top of the list was mental disorder in some degree, and that affects in the United States 1 out of 10. That means over 19 million Americans are mentally unbalanced. And that statistic comes from the American Blue Cross Association. About 1 in 10 has some form of mental illness, and only between 10 to 20% of these are getting any kind of treatment whatsoever. And the others probably will never be treated throughout their lives and will usually just be considered by their fellow students, their neighbors, and friends as a little odd. But then, of course, it may come to the point where the people who are now considered normal will be considered odd, and I suppose this is an argument that is used continually by those who are considered odd by those who are considered normal. There seems to be general agreement, according to the Blue Cross, that a vast reservoir of untreated mental illness exists in the general population, far overshadowing the relatively small group who present themselves for care. And yet, when you look at the unbelievable facts about how many are going to get any kind of care, and then, of course, you look at the success of that care and what occurs and whether it degenerates into electrical shock treatments, hot and cold baths, or a frontal lobotomy, or the use of LSD by psychiatrists, and as to whether or not those treatments ever really do straighten people out for good, then look at this ghastly statistic. Right now, 800,000 Americans are hospitalized at any one given time. They're going in and out, some released, others coming in, for disorders of the mind. How often do you drive across the Triborough Bridge if you live in New York City or that area? Maybe on your way to Kennedy, as I've done many times, on the way to the airport. And there's that giant, big, ugly complex of building over there that you can see right through and hear the iron bars on the window, and you see these hopeless, hapless human beings in there like so many animals, their minds gone. Some of them as a result of drugs and dope, others as a result of congenital deformities, and others as a result of psychiatric problems. But here they are, hopeless, hapless vegetables, their minds virtually gone. A giant mental hospital reserved for people that apparently are beyond help. Maybe not all of them, I imagine there are different wards, but in every state, we have these mental institutions where people live who have gone clear beyond the borders of this vast group of 19 million who are just looked upon as being mentally unbalanced. But isn't that a shocking fact that at any given time, 800,000 Americans are hospitalized for disorders of the mind? But this doesn't even begin to tell the whole story. It's estimated that one in every 12 Americans at some time in his life, if we could continue to go on without a vast worldwide nuclear war, without drought and famine, without being obliterated as the human race, that means if we continue to go as we're going today, only more so, then it's estimated that one out of every 12 Americans will at some time be hospitalized for mental ills. And that on any day, 9 million will have serious mental disorders. And by the way, the cost for that is $1.7 billion a year. But, you know, the people in Britain are in worse shape. The Daily Mail said in 1965 that one person in four has some psychiatric disorder ranging from minor neurosis to major mental illness, according to a survey in Britain. One woman in nine and one man in 14 will spend time in a mental institution in Britain. Those figures are from the National Association for Mental Health. Not one doctor in his private study that gets a weird idea, but a National Association for Mental Health. Daily Mail, London, November 4th, 1965. Now, a social scientist has said that 15 to 30% of the world's population suffers from mental disorders, not just Britain and the United States, but 15 to 30. That's a wild figure, I know. That's a broad figure. His name is Dr. Alexander Layton, professor of social psychiatry and anthropology at Cornell. He made the estimate in a speech before a special session of the United Nations Science and Technology Conference. And he said stresses disturbing mental health are found in primate agricultural villages as well as in advanced civilizations. And he said this is important for underdeveloped countries because mental illness probably will increase under tensions of rapid social change and the stresses that accompany industrial growth. Now there are 9 major ways guaranteed to produce mental illness. Here's the formula for producing mental illness. And it's just about a real wild cross-section of the daily way of life of multiple millions of us. So here it is. Number one, in any society, a decline of religious authority. The pulpit and the force of religion losing its power. And the dissolution of religious fervor, the dissolution of religious conviction, and therefore the dissolution of action based upon religious conviction. Now you can call that just a psychological thing, and for the moment I'll let it lie at that. But that's one of the factors listed by a psychiatrist and member of the Committee on Mental Health. And really, the only hope for mental illness prevention has got to start in the home. Most of these people, and I do say most, are not born that way. They're made that way. So the second major thing that will create and produce mental illness is the decline of morality in the home and in society. Immorality, homosexuality, transvestitism, dropping out from the normal, is a direct producer of mental illness. You bet it is. It absolutely is. And the sloppy, swill-filled mill race of trashy filth and pornography that floods into the newsstands around the high school and grade school areas in our big cities, directly into the minds of your youth, are creating a great deal of it. Third, the failure in home life when tens of thousands of mothers go to work regardless of the reason for work, and that reason usually is because, as I have already proved in other surveys, most people think things and money are going to make them happy. They're a nation of the Joneses trying to keep up with the Joneses next door. They want a higher income bracket. They want a higher living standard. They want more things, and so mom works. And may the kids go straight to whatever activity suits their fancy, which usually means novels, cartoons, comic books, and sometimes a little more violent forms. You know, when you hear somebody actually defending comic books, you hear somebody actually defending anything from Mother Goose rhymes, which can be pretty grisly, right on down to Grimm's, and aren't they? Fairy tales. You begin to wonder. And I suppose some few people who themselves have escaped mental problems and who feel they are comparatively normal look back in their lives and they justify it by saying, well, I used to look at comic books and I don't feel like I want to kill anybody. Agreed. Different pressures and different influences react differently on different people. But those forces and influences are there. And if there are other problems there as well, they are going to react in rather violent fashion. And I've got plenty of statistics to prove to you the admissions from the lips of little children who learned how, as they said, to commit a horrible, bestial, animalistic atrocity directly over television from a comic book or a novel. A couple of little kids who systematically murdered their father and waited for their mother and shot her down said they saw it and learned it on TV. Now, they said it, I didn't. Now, the fourth major way in which you can be guaranteed to produce mental illness among peoples is lack of discipline in the home and a lack of discipline in the schools. The destruction and the erosion of discipline in the home, where dad just doesn't wear the trousers anymore, he's not the head of the house, and where there is no real discipline of any constructive type, and a parallel dissolution of discipline in the school systems. Fifth would be exposure of children to tens of thousands of irresponsible adults allowed to run loose. And, of course, this happens all the time, doesn't it? The children are eyewitnesses to all of mom's and dad's worries and fears and spats and arguments and fights, and especially their entertainment. And today, the home itself is eroding so badly that rarely, if ever, do you find a real family situation. I mean that sincerely. You think these are shocking or overdone or exaggerated statistics? Don't kid yourself. Don't just stand around and defend society because you think you're part and parcel of it. Ask yourself how many homes you really know, really, sincerely, not because you want to argue about it, not because a lot of shocking statistics get under your hide and make you a little bit angry, not because you want to convince yourself it isn't really that way. Be honest with yourself. Even if you're not with somebody else, be honest with yourself. How many? How many do you know? really deeply dedicated, devoted, happy, stable homes where dad is the head of the home and mom is mighty proud of it, and where the children are taught, and I mean broad moral principles, and where they are educated at home as well as in the school, and where the real religious authority and the home authority and the school authority is emphasized, and where there is a real, wonderful, and a happy environment. You don't know of very many. Now, if you know of a few, congratulations, that's fine. I don't even say that facetiously. I know of quite a few myself. I know of a number that have been helped to become that kind of a home by writing for the booklets we have on the subject on how to solve family arguments, for example. And the one on the plain truth about child rearing that talks about families as well as children. And they're free of charge, and a lot of people have been helped by them. And that's wonderful, that's fine. But don't ever begin to sink behind the old defenses that so many people use, that things aren't as bad, or they're no worse than they have ever been. They're not as bad as they seem. Don't kid yourself. Nearly 20 million American people walking around with some kind of a weird thought process where they're considered as odd and mentally ill. Don't kid yourself, things aren't worse. You think that's just better reporting? When kid was one furrow behind dad, who was one furrow behind the mule, behind the plow, his mind was a little more stable and a little more absolutely balanced and close to the earth than it is today. Now, the sixth major method by which you can be guaranteed to produce mental illness in a society would be exposure to seduction in motion pictures. And, of course, there's so much of that that why even bother talking about it? People don't think they can sell movies, and it isn't just sex anymore. It's got to be sick sex. It's got to be weird sex. It's got to be unbalanced, perverted, animalistic, bestial, degenerate, offbeat, sick sex. It can't just be the normal boy meets girl, boy and girl grow to love one another. Fall in love is a very unfortunate misnomer, an actual untruth when you understand it. And don't get alarmed by that. That's a fact, if you just understand what love is. But you couldn't sell books. You couldn't sell motion pictures on that kind of copy today, so they just don't provide much of it. Although I think that if many people were surveyed on it, they would have to admit that a fairly simple little direct motion picture like the original Tammy picture that came out, or way back, like the one called Swiss Family Robinson that was from the famous book by the same title, the things of this nature are the ones that nevertheless stick in people's minds long after they forget. Something like, what was the one where somebody ends up thinking he's his own mother? That's a fact. It's a man, and he thinks he's his own mother at the end of the movie. I avoided that one like the plague, like the yellow jaundice, because I'd heard about it. And some of these things are so weird that you just can't begin to imagine what the effect might be on young people. Now, anybody who denies there is an effect on young people is living in some kind of a vacuum of self-induced idiocy. I mean that. He really is. If you would go back in your own childhood, you would have to admit to yourself, regardless as to your age, that there was a time when, even if it was a story, sitting on a soapbox listening to other kids in the evening, you heard your first grisly story, it made you scream and yell all night long. Yes, you did too. And you sit around today as a mature person and convince yourself by your own kidding of yourself that these motion pictures don't impress these young minds, then you're living in some kind of a false world, of a hallucination of your own creation. I remember the comparatively completely innocuous, inane, and harmless motion picture about Tom Sawyer and Becky lost in the cave when I was a young boy. And I woke up screaming with nightmares over that, because here was Injun Joe, you know, trying to get at these two kids when they were in his cave. And that's really the only thing that impressed me and stuck in my mind for years about that motion picture, was these two kids with their little dwindling short candle lost in a cave, a labyrinth of a dark cave, and this Indian who was pursuing them and trying to kill them. Gave me nightmares. You can imagine what some of these weird science fiction motion pictures do to kids today. Now, the seventh major way in which you could produce mental illness in a society is exposure to obscenity in comic books. You take a look at these kids sitting around munching cookies and drinking soft drinks and looking through the magazines, some of the sloppy trash and the swill that's available to people on magazine stands today. Well, enough said. Is there exposure to obscenity today? You bet there is. The eighth is exposure to plenty of murder in television shows and in motion pictures and any other exposure to murder, for that matter. Now, you can get exposure to murder, of course, by merely looking at the newspapers. And again, agreed that a normal person, a normal, mature person, who hasn't had all these other pressures and who hasn't been of such background and pressures in his own life and his family, that his mind hasn't taken that track, is still not going to want to murder someone just by hearing that other people have murdered. But think again. Most of the murders today are between and among husbands and wives, close relatives, family homicides. And if you would talk to those people in advance, why, I wouldn't even think of committing a murder, they would tell you. But this constant pressure is there. And then when an insane rage grips their minds, and when they completely lose all of their control of their inhibitions in a giant enraged battle between husband and wife, frequently they do snatch up a butcher knife or a pistol, which it seems people have lying close to hand with increasing regularity, and somebody ends up dead, and somebody else is either a suicide or ends up in the hands of the police, and you've got another sensational trial underway. Your children have probably witnessed, if they're age 6, 7, or 8 by this time, literally thousands of murders. Everything from stranglings to explosions to burnings to bludgeonings to stabbings to shootings. And some of them might have been pulled apart by horses or dragged to death by wild animals. I mean, they can just come up with any kind of a murder you can imagine, and children sit and watch it by the hours. Now, the ninth major method by which you could be guaranteed to produce mental illness in a society: exposure to publicity of crime and human frailty, and really sensationalizing it in the press. And of course, that's done all the time. So what were they? Decline of religious authority first, decline and weakening of morality in the home and in all of society. Then the third was the failure in home life, because homes are upside down and mom is working and dad isn't home, and regardless as to the reason for it, failure in home life is a major contributing cause. Fourth was lack of discipline in the home, with a parallel lack of it in school. Fifth was exposure to adult life in all forms of entertainment and just around the kids the way the adults are living it. Then exposure to seduction, exposure to obscenity, exposure to murder, exposure to publicity of crime and sensationalization of crime in the press. And these are rife and rampant in our societies today, and it's no wonder that mental illness is the greatest single public health worry today. You need to write for this article that I have for you on how to have mental health. What is the real key to mental health? And if you want to read some good news about the way the world will be when minds will be straightened out, then write for this booklet, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. Write for this article on mental health. And while you're at it, write for the book that I mentioned on the plain truth about child rearing, and the article on how to have a happy marriage and how to solve family arguments. They're free of charge, no price, if you write to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California. Be sure to tell us the name of the radio station to which you're listening. There is no charge, no price, no follow-up. No one's going to call on you. They're free. Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.